Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It's Thursday, 3rd of December, 2020, and we have markets in fairly good shape. We were down a little bit yesterday in the early session in the U.S. and then managed to sort of claw our way back to essentially unchanged, close to those record high closes for the cycle. You can see that on the NASDAQ in NASDAQ 100 futures on slide 2 in today's presentation. But Peter, I created this slide 3. It was inspired by a retweeted somebody and pointing out some incredible spike in the options call volume. And I was less interested in the spike. I just wanted to see how the trend, we've talked a lot about these this heavy option trading and how much it's maybe the tail wagging the dog of the market, if you will. But in other words, this option activity creating underlying moves. I want to create a bit of a longer term perspective, both in terms of the moving average, which I've done for the call volumes and the dark blue data series you see on slide 3, and then contrasting that with the put option volume, which is the lighter blue level there. And you can see that in the past, these big surges in option trading activity have essentially been for both puts and calls, especially when we've had ugly market sell-offs like we had in early 2018 and the volpocalypse, and then the late 2018 with the Fed has taken it too far. And then over the pandemic. But this time, we are seeing record call option trading volumes, even on a moving average basis, by far, far and away, multiples of where the moving long-term moving average is. And the put option activity is just really not following suit. I think it's an interesting sign. We talked about this recently, that it's a dangerous sign as well, because what happens if there is a shock to the market when the market-making activity has to sort of abandon its hedging positions, and if the liquidity isn't there. And that's something this Mike Green has gone on about a lot, that the liquidity is simply not there in times of emergency. That's a bit of a long opening spiel, but I don't know if you wanted to add any comments to that more than just sort of the day-to-day activity here.
Well, first of all, still Stat Wolves, some credit to you, John. I actually think this is one of the probably one of the best charts I've seen this year. To be absolutely honest, I'm not saying this because you're my colleague. I think it actually opens up the wider discussion that about this whole retail investor participation. And we had the conversations internally at the bank here on Monday with, you know, we've had three times in history with a lot of retail participation, and it's gone gung ho, you could say, all three times. So in the run up in the 1920s to the 29 crash, the 87 crash, there was also a lot of retail participation there in the 80s, and then again in the run up to the .com, and now we're seeing it again, and it's very one sided on the call option side. As we've talked about before, John, it's also a lot of weekly call options, and that puts enormous pressure on the market, the market makers on their hedging activities, potentially bidding up price on the underlying physicals stocks. And I think it's just a sign of the age. It's become extremely easy to trade the options. It creates leverage returns. You can juice a lot of gains on this via your and you can do it on your mobile apps. You could do it in your while you're at work, and you could do it on while you're on your almost while you're biking, right? and a lot of this activity is going on in the technology names where you have a lot of momentum. And I think it's a market that feeds on itself. And I think the big worry is, as you said, is that with such a skewed option market and with all the hedging underlying, I mean, what happens if we get some exogenous shock to the system suddenly, like COVID-19, it could be anything, right? And it sets in motion a sell-off, not only in the physical market and the futures market by, you know, ordinary traders and investors, but also suddenly market makers that, you know, can offload or should offload all their hedging positions because the 1 week call options goes to zero in a split second. It's kind of those markets that you should be really worried about. And although I still maintain a positive view on equities on a medium term, because I simply cannot see the juice in bonds, these are some of the things you need to have on your radar.
Yeah, I think that's the key message to take away. We're not trying to predict a crash, but we're just saying there's some underlying features here in this market that are extremely dangerous, and whether the market is able to absorb exogenous shocks of almost any kind, really, when you have this market structure. And I don't have an answer. It's almost a question, and maybe let's follow up on this and put that question out to our audience as well. Look at the options acceleration before the COVID market correction really started. There was really a lot of energy coming into the market even before that. And I just cut you off. What did you want to add there?
Well, I think and I think that's actually just taking us to the next slide as well, that probably one area we should really be focusing or keep a very close attention to is the yields. As Peter mentioned, bonds are not offering much return, and potentially they're offering at least in the short term, potentially a negative return, because we're seeing the yield rise over the past or this here beginning of December in the US, where we are once again honing in on this 1% in the 10-year. In the 10-year notes area, and again, we've highlighted on several occasions the big threat to probably some of these momentum stocks is rising interest rates. Not that 1% will be a trigger, but if we start to move higher than that, I think Peter, you mentioned before something like 1.5-1.5%. That could be an area that starts to create some increased nervousness.
Yeah, and one of the reasons we saw yields coming up higher. Yesterday specifically, it looks like we're seeing the House Democratic leadership giving in on their $2.4 trillion stimulus level and signing on to using the $908 billion Senate bipartisan package proposal as a framework as well. So we have a starting point for some kind of deal there. Question being whether President Trump will sign on to anything. He's in a rather sour mood in his lame duck period. So key to watch, and also extremely key to watch this 1% level, as you pointed out, Ola, because it is what is supporting incredibly stretched valuations, especially for those high growth stocks, as we've emphasized on a number of calls. Briefly, before I give it over back to you, Peter, on a couple of individual stories, just wanted to point out the concerning news in the U.S. We have this record market. At the same time, we have record deaths for a single day in the U.S., a sad tally there of 2,700 plus dying in a single day in the U.S. and at record hospitalization. So we really have a market as well that's at a almost a record sort of dissonance between the reality on the ground, new shutdowns. L.A., I believe, is totally shutting down versus a market that's looking to a post-COVID vaccine rollout future. But I'll let you take it away on a couple of interesting stories you've got for us in the next couple of slides.
But just to talk about what you just said with the US and the COVID and reality on the ground versus what you see on the pandemic, it's interesting. And I know it's anecdotal evidence, but I've been sitting this last couple of nights actually buying Christmas presents for my family over the internet, and I'm surprised, and it's staggering how many of the things I'm looking at is actually sold out and they don't have it on inventory. I've never seen it before in my 10 years. I've never seen maybe it's just because I'm picking things that are sold off, but I don't get it. And I'm wondering whether, I mean, that's the whole question. And we'll talk more about it when we go into the next year, guys, with the whole the potential inflation. I saw a comment yesterday. I mean, that this time around, the stimulus and the support that have come from the government side this time around have been flowing into consumption much more directly than what we have seen in the past 10, 12 years, where it has been more in the technical side from the central banks securities buying here and there. This time around, it was a major bazooka directly into the purchase and demand. So I'm just really curious, and today actually we'll get, maybe we'll put in tomorrow and tomorrow's podcast, we'll get the new weekly update on the global 40-foot container benchmark index, which have been flying and flying and flying, and I'm really curious to see whether it just continues. I know there's a little bit of seasonality going into the Christmas season, but still, that's an interesting one to watch.
Yeah, that's one we highlighted a lot in our internal discussions as well. And just to highlight your point, that huge stimulus cash splash in the U.S. obviously driving a lot of consumption, like you mentioned, and most of that consumption goods, they come from Asia, they come from China, and those freight rates from China are staggering. They've gone up by multiples of where they were prior to the pandemic. So everyone's been caught off guard here. But go ahead, sorry.
Yeah, just quick, two quick equity stories. The first one, I won't talk too much about it. It's just something we need to flag, of course, in slide 5, UniCredit. I've been selling off pretty hard in the last couple of trading sessions. The CEO was ousted by the board. There's a little bit of turmoil about that bank, but I think it actually goes to a wider discussion about European banks. We've had it before. I mean, if you look at UniCredit. I mean, you have all this turmoil around all these European banks, whether it's money laundering here at Danske in Northern Europe or whatever it is, and it's now it's UniCredit. We've had the troubles in Spanish banks, UK banks with all the Brexits. We had the trading scandals at French banks. We have German banks that are undercapitalized. I mean, just the troubles goes on and on and on. And I think UniCredit is a very good example. If you look at the past 5 years, they have almost doubled the amount of equity on the balance sheet. The market cap is unchanged, and the total assets have gone up by 5%. So, and then we're looking at these price to book ratios, but they should have gone up. But it's just essentially what you can deduct from those changes I just mentioned there is that the underlying assets that sits on balance sheets on European banks are just simply not profitable assets. They're not generating enough profitability for investors to really bid up the book value of these banks. And that's just, it's just a trouble. As you can hear, I'm still negative on it. I just wanted to flag it. It's one of the stories in Europe you were wondering why we hadn't commented on in the past couple of days. And there was. On slide six, we obviously have to highlight one of the hottest IPOs of this year, which was Snowflake, as we mentioned the other day, with Berkshire Hathaway and Warren Buffett for the first time engaging in a information technology IPO, buying almost worth 700 million of shares at a very, very low price. And they have, as we talked about yesterday, gained 1.5 billion on that position already. The shares were down 3.5%. And if you take the aftermarket print, the stock is actually down 18% now, 18 from the highs on Monday. And I think this was just one of those results that nothing could have been good enough for analysts or investors. I mean, it's a very pricey stock. We're talking about 100 times almost EV to sales trailing. And as you can also see in the insert on slide six from the analysts at day, some are positive, but most are actually on a hold. I mean, it's just, it's so pricey that you have to sit back and just watch and cross your fingers that the company can continue to deliver those 100% growth rates, because that's needed with such an evaluation.
Wow. All right. We mentioned shipping rates and consumer demand for products, but on the energy side, Ola, we've got the difficulty of the lack of or reduced amount of actual activity on the ground, from all these lockdowns. And I noticed yesterday the implied demand figure in the U.S. It did one of those seasonal charts. I don't have it here in our slide deck today, but showing a dip. Obviously, these reduced activity in the U.S. starting to bite in terms of actually moving around. Now, what's your take on oil here? I mean, it's such an odd mismatch between something like freight rates going ballistic and, as Peter indicates, things selling out. And then, you know, on the oil side of things, we're still talking about this massive gap.
Exactly, John. And the question is really if you as an oil trader want to look out the side window or you want to look out the front window, front window. Because if you're looking to what's happening around you right now, it's clearly not a healthy situation. I suppose we may be a little bit exposed to being a bit too negative here in Europe and in the US, because obviously most of the growth that we've seen this year has been in Asia. So obviously Asia is a good story in terms of demand, but in Europe and the US, it's still struggling. These numbers you mentioned earlier with the risk of additional lockdowns in the US, the implied demand for gasoline was weak last week. I'm following a guy called GasBody, and they're basically taking up to date numbers on miles traveled, and they see another big reduction next week. So we are in a weak period in terms of demand. So into all this, OPEC has to navigate not only to stay together, but also navigate the challenges that lies ahead over the next few months until the vaccine is going to have an impact. And oil is holding up really well in the expectation that OPEC Plus will come to some kind of agreement today, which will not rattle the market. But it is obviously quite a challenging time. As put on slide nine here, we can see even before these discussions, OPEC production, according to a Bloomberg survey, rose by nearly 600,000 barrels last month. And you can see the big jump there is from Libya, and Libya is not part of the group that needs to keep production down. So that obviously could rise potentially even a bit further. So it is a challenging time for OPEC, but the market clearly believing that that an agreement will be made. Otherwise, obviously, there is a risk we could return down towards the mid-40s in Brent.
Yeah, and then on the gold price, we're seeing some movement this morning. We've got this weaker dollar making some new lows in the dollar versus the euro versus Aussie. Gold standing up to attention. Where do we need to get to on gold to sort of say, okay, this reversal danger is sort of in the rear mirror?
Well, looking at the slide 10, as you mentioned, there's no doubt that the big level that we broke below just recently, that triggered off that dump we had on Friday and extension on Monday, was the or is the 1850 level. If we can climb back above that level, then I think that would be that will signal quite a strong signal for the market. And it's interesting this week that some of the reason why we saw these downgrades recently from banks in terms of their gold projection for 21 was the risk of rising yields. And this week we actually have seen yields move up quite a bit. Obviously, we haven't broken key levels yet, but it's moving up because inflation expectations are moving up. Anyway, we just can't reiterate enough that yields can go up and not be gold unfriendly as long as the yield going up because inflation expectations are going up. So that's just worth keeping in mind. But also just highlight on that slide that the real winner now over the past few weeks is not really copper, which has done a lot. It's not gold, it's actually platinum. Platinum has now outperformed gold by what, 20, close to 20% since the vaccine announcement on November 9th. So that's really a metal that's received renewed interest. And you can see on the ratio there, it's dropped to the lowest since the beginning of this year, but it's obviously come. It potentially has more to gain going forward. But platinum is a good story right now. But that was a long answer to a short question. 1850 is the key level.
Okay, thanks for the update. And let's look at a couple of FX stories briefly. Sterling is still on the defensive here. Euro sterling up towards a zero spot, 90.50. And yesterday the news that France wants to reserve the right to basically veto any Brexit deal that is agreed if it doesn't feel the terms are fair. There was also an Irish official chiming in that the UK better think twice before trying to reintroduce these controversial internal market bill features that would have overruled the terms of the original withdrawal agreement. And there was some other wording on finance, the area of finance, but I've given up sort of determining direction. It was very interesting when euro sterling was challenging the lows, expecting for a breakthrough, and it's just never come. And we're getting into the very last days here. Supposedly this week was supposed to be quote unquote the last week. Are we headed for a fudge and some kind of delay? That would seem to me most likely, and not some sort of proper cliff edge Brexit. I just don't see how that scenario comes about. But for now, we have euro sterling mid-range, as you can see on slide 7. Waiting for direction, waiting for an announcement there. I'm sure options volatilities have picked up a little bit, but I would still suggest that option plays out into, especially now for those looking for sterling strength, because we've had such a big consolidation for some time out in January. Perhaps put options in euro sterling for those looking for finally some sort of deal to be managed, and for sterling to get some support from that. A little bit concerned as well that sterling hasn't done better here when we have global risk sentiment in such good shape. And then, of course, the dollar is weaker with this very strong global risk sentiment. And finally, we're seeing Aussie dollar challenging above those highs. Only note of caution there is this recent spat and tensions with China. And we've not been seeing the Chinese yuan participating. It is pounding towards the lows, dollar CNY, but I would like to see that participating and then making new lows here to have more full-throated support of the Aussie dollar move higher. But I still think it's generally just linked up and sort of passively correlated to the whims of global risk sentiment here. It's not been very impressive relative to, for example, moves in more risk correlated assets and equities themselves. So, but we'll keep an eye on it. It does theoretically open up the chart level or chart range up towards zero spot 80 plus this move above 74.15. And then if we
If
are
I can
here,
just make
yeah, hop in with you've got some things on grains, a slide on grains here.
Yeah, we had a bit of a technical issue yesterday, so I didn't get to it. But just highlighting the grain sector or the agricultural space in general, we've had a phenomenal rally since during the second half of 2020. The chart pattern is looking a little bit exhausted right now. especially I'll say the grain space. And one of the reasons why we just have to be a little bit worried here in the short term is the very, very elevated long that we see in the market. You can see that on slide 11. The black line is the current combined long in wheat, corn, and soybeans, and you can see it's obviously well above the average that we've seen for this this time of year over the past 5 years. So so that's just a bit of a caution there. We've seen some rain starting to hit the key areas in South America. That's obviously helping their summer summer crop, which is going to be harvested in a few months' time, and also just a little bit of slowdown in export demand for U.S. Products. But I think that the weaker dollar that we're seeing right now potentially is going to keep some support on the market. But just looks like we are potentially just in the face of correction here.
All right, and then Peter, do you have any words on the earnings? Today is really the last day for interesting earnings for the week. Anything you want to highlight there?
Yeah, as you can see on the slide, we've highlighted DocuSign in red and put in a little insert where you can see the share price. It's clearly one of those home from work, you could argue, but I think it more importantly, of course, it has been driven by the work from home and the whole pandemic and digital solutions to sign contracts. That's what they do. You can do secure electronic signing of contracts, but they were already on the move late in 2019. It's clearly a company that I think serves a well needed needs in the digital economy. And as I put in from Dealbook the other day, this whole Salesforce acquisition of Slack that we talked about yesterday and also last week when it was first rumored could potentially be the starting shot of more deals being made within this work from home, employees not traveling around to sign a contract. So you can maybe do that with DocuSign, etc. And a lot of these stocks that will form the new working culture of this digital age. And we talked about it yesterday. You know, these surveys indicate that 35%, up to 35% of all business traveling could be gone permanently because companies have figured out, hey, you save a lot of money, you save a lot of time for your employees, so they can actually be more productive, and you can do a lot of these things, sign contracts, so you don't have to be physically near your partners all the time. So it's interesting times. I just want to flag it out there, but it's definitely one of those that will be traded, and it has been one of the stocks that have been traded by the new, can we call it, Robinhood traders.
Okay. And then on the macro side, we have an interesting day with all the final services PMIs for across Europe, but also the U.S. ISM services for November up at 4 o'clock European time, at least. Wanted to flag that the Tuesday ISM manufacturing, just to point out, the employment subindex there slipped below 50. So net contraction in hiring demand. And I noticed that the ISM services employment index was only at 50.1 for October. So if we're not seeing solid signs there, and perhaps we won't be because of, again, the COVID resurgence in the U.S., I would say it's a note of concern. As well, on the weekly claims number, I was reading a Bloomberg article this morning discussing the difficulty in interpreting those numbers in recent months because of people filing, backward filing for prior weeks, and just sort of an overwhelmed, some of these overwhelmed agencies trying to count these, but they should be getting more accurate from here. And I think we've kind of expressed that to a degree, but just maybe a further grain of salt with the weekly numbers. It's very difficult, and there's somewhat of a mismatch between the continuing claims levels versus what still appears to be record prior to pandemic record weekly initial claims coming in around that 700,000 level. So we'll have a challenge interpreting those. And then we have the November change in non-farm payrolls up tomorrow. One of the noted economists who I think is quite credible out there, Ian Shepherdson, I believe he's with Pantheon, suddenly failing to remember the outfit he's with, said he saw a risk of a negative payrolls print on non-farm tomorrow. Just that would be interesting to see how the market absorbs that. If that does prove to be the case, the expectations are for multiple hundreds of thousands on the positive side. So that would be quite a mismatch if that were the case. I think for today, it's been a long one, so we'll wrap it up here. And we will be back tomorrow with the week's final Saxo Market Call podcast for today. Thanks for joining.